What is going on, Roto Grinders? It's 9 o'clock on a Wednesday night. Of course, that means it's the NFL Pick Six. That's a six pick six show. That's a lot of S's. It's just two, I guess. Well, whatever. Can we do this again, Devin? Oh wait, we're doing it live. We're doing it live. I'm Dean. Dean 7904. If you want to get all technical on me as far as the DFS streets, it is week 13, where we've reached the quarter pole. You think I would know how to introduce the show at this point? Apparently, I have not. I can introduce my comrades, who will do a lot better than me, I imagine. Batting first, you got Rich Rebar. Of course, you know him from Sharp Football Analysis. Rich, you know, we survived the Thanksgiving slate. We survived the longest slate in the entire history of the NFL, I imagine, with that spectacular Pittsburgh-Baltimore game ending earlier today. And, you know, any thoughts of looking back, or you want to talk about week 13 and go forward?
Oh, man. Week 12 just ended literally an hour ago. And it's already week 13. You know, I am the prize. And we're, you know, I've already written up every game but two already for this week. So, yeah, we might as well talk some week 13 and look ahead. We were hot last week, so we might as well keep it riding.
Yeah, let's do it. We got to finish strong for sure. Lucky week number 13, John. John Daigle from Roto World also joining us as he does normally. Just found out he's going to be joining me on Sunday, and not this upcoming Sunday, but apparently next Sunday. At least that's the tentative spot. Of course, we go live 3 hours before lock. Hit the like button on YouTube, subscribe, you know, the whole deal. Hit all the bells, the whistles, the buttons, and everything. Let you know about all the notifications. John, I was saying to you before the show started, like, I don't like this slate. You know, we got 11 games. Well, we should say we talk about the main slate, obviously, on bye. Still two more teams on bye, Carolina and Tampa. We don't talk about them. Sunday night, Denver and KC. Not talking about them. Monday night doubleheader. No Dallas, no Baltimore, no Buffalo versus San Francisco. In Arizona, that could be a fun game for sure. Unfortunately, not in the main slate. And then I think, what is it, Washington and Pittsburgh? Is that the other game that's going on that's like we're pretending it's not going to – it's happening in a forest and it doesn't make any sound? Is that what's happening there?
Correct. The doubleheader Monday night, we will have a two-game slate to look forward to. But for this one, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It's a lot like 2 weeks ago where – you could afford to pay down at quarterback. Justin Herbert, I believe, in that double stack against the Jets ended up winning the slate. But there was a reason we were discussing Andy Dalton in that slate against the Vikings, because there weren't many top options at quarterback. And that seems a lot like this week. You have Mahomes off the main slate on Sunday night. Kyler has a bum shoulder. Josh Allen plays on Monday night. And Russ is regressing while Seattle's offense is choosing to run the ball more. So, really, it seems like another week to cheapy quarterbacks and ancillary bums that we like on this show. And I'm sure we're going to talk a lot of them along the way.
Yeah.
My early take on this week in general, and I know a lot of people, it's the last week of the fantasy regular season out of leagues. It's the last week in the FFPC playoffs before the big dance. I think it's going to be a low-scoring fantasy week this week. Hopefully I'm wrong, but I'm looking at this layout because I always look at the quarterbacks when I'm doing my weekly rankings to start the week, and it gives me a good feel of like, yeah, these quarterbacks are all in a good spot. These offenses are good spots. This week, I don't get that feeling. Mahomes is in a good spot. Rodgers has been Rodgers, but the rest of the quarterbacks, the top dogs, all have some warts this week. I mean, John hit on Ross. I mean, Deshaun Watson just lost Will Fuller. Josh Allen's playing a 49ers defense that's way better defending the intermediate game than the vertical game. And Josh Allen has been awful in the vertical game the past 6 weeks. Kyler is not running. What's going on with his shoulder? Justin Herbert's versus New England. They've only allowed three rookie quarterbacks in Bill Belichick's history to have 20 fantasy points against them. Is Lamar going to play? Is he, you know, that's a good spot against the Cowboys. We just saw Ben Roethlisberger kind of meander through a game, and it's going to be another day game for them kind of. What the hell is Taysom Hill? Is he just New Orleans Cam Newton? I mean, it's. I'm looking at these quarterbacks, and there are not a lot of quarterbacks that stand out, and that's what usually drives the week, because you say these quarterbacks are me in all good spots, and even if we don't want to play them and we don't go down to them in fantasy, that's what drives you know, us for still the scoring for every week is how good these quarterbacks play.
Yeah, and running my optimals on a Wednesday night, obviously things change. We saw it last week, whatever. And we put out some good information last week, but I'm sure a lot of it changed once Sunday hit, obviously. And, you know, who knows 2020, what's going to happen in these next several days. But this is – we can only work with what we have here on a Wednesday night. But, you know, hopefully we get some good information to people. And you mentioned the Wilson thing. What was the quote? Pete Carroll was talking about the magic number is 50. You want to have 50 combined completions and rush attempts. That's what helps you win games in the year 2020. Because he credits that to Vince Lombardi. And, like, you know, good for Vince Lombardi. But, like, you can't. The game is involved What are we doing here? What is that? Is that for real? What's going to happen? Is he not going to cook anymore? We're going to order some Uber Eats.
Football coaches, man, they are such a disaster.
Oh, yeah, it was a good run. That's unfortunate. That really is too bad. What we do in this show, we focus on three main games, and then we, after we knock out the three main games on the 11 game main slate, then we'll branch out. We'll kind of run it back as far as cleaning up other quarterbacks we liked it. We're not in those three main games. Some running backs, receivers. I would say tight ends. We'll name a couple of tight ends. I don't think we'll like them, but we'll probably name some, I suppose. And yeah, Rich, what you were saying basically as far as the slate, speaking to the whole context of the slate, is the number one total on the board is the Cleveland Browns at the Tennessee Titans. And like, I don't know, it's a 54, which is a big number. Tennessee, a 5.5-point favorite. We saw Henry, he was an absolute monster last week. He can do it, you know, any given week, obviously. And it's December, I'm told, like he's unstoppable in December. That's what people say. He changes. I don't know the December, like November splits. And I know people think that's a thing. Do you think it's a thing, out of curiosity? Is that a thing, or is that just nonsense? Rich.
Me? I think it's probably more happenstance. I mean, remember, Derrick Henry's really only been a full-time running back for one season and plus a December. So that's what's kind of driven his stats. You know, remember 2 years ago, he was playing behind Deion Lewis up until the last month of the season. And then last year was like his first real season as like a full-time running back. So, I mean, we really only have on Derrick Henry's sample, like basically right now, like a 30-game sample of as a full-time running back. So a lot of his stats are probably a little bit skewed from like workload and like just, you know, back-end stuff. But, I mean, he's been good all year. What do we need December for? Like, he's already been good.
So I didn't play him last week because it was November. Like, I played him last week because it was November 29th, actually. He was leveraged off Dalvin Cook, and he was also a unique way to stack the game once Jonathan Taylor got ruled out because everyone was going to one-off Nyheim Hines or Jordan Wilkins. So I was like, oh, I can double leverage this spot with Derrick Henry also against a Colts front seven missing two of their top interior defenders. That's why I played him. I don't give a damn about the month.
I think one of the big decision points as far as this slate, and then, I mean, I'm probably going to grab shares of both. I assume I am. Diggle, what do you think as far as Henry, the matchup here against Cleveland, and then you got Dalvin Cook, who I presume he's going to be fine and good to go versus Jacksonville. If you can only plant the flag in one of those two, who do you prefer?
For me, it's probably still Derrick Henry. And again, don't care about the month. It's the fact that he's now averaged 29 touches in back-to-back games. As I know, we don't think this matters, but like Deontay Foreman was coming in the game. He's been injured, and he's been coming in the game and taking touches away. Derrick Henry's still not getting much passing volume, 1.5 receptions per game, so three total receptions the past 2 weeks. But overall, we know, even though they have been poor on early downs, that's what this team does. That's what they're going to do. And again, this total has been bet up. It didn't open as the highest. It got bet up to the highest. So there's clearly sharp money coming in on the game environment overall. That's what led us to, I believe we discussed the Browns team total last week. They were bet up to 29 points, so you had to have exposure somewhere. And again, this Titans team total got bet up 2 points as the week has gone on as well. So you have to have exposure somewhere. The Browns have this year been a pass funnel more or less, and they will be getting Myles Garrett back. So a pivot perhaps to Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown is really interesting if the field comes in on Derrick Henry. But the touches, at least, we know are going to be there for Henry.
Rich, your thoughts on that as far as the Tennessee offense?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Henry and the last three power backs the Browns have faced, James Conner, Josh Jacobs, James Robinson, all those guys have gone over 100 yards on them. And we know what Henry is and what he's going to get. I mean, I still look at both these guys, though, Henry and Chubb, and, you know, they are the Spider-Man meme. They've been priced up. I mean, if these guys don't score, you're still holding the bag for sure on both of these players. And, you know, so you need touchdowns when you pay this kind of, you know, kind of salary equity. It is a tricky week because it's really Dalvin Cook and then a, you know, hop, skip, and a jump to anybody you really want to play outside of these guys who have been really good. I mean, Nick Chubb has been phenomenal. I mean, he's played his past five full games. I mean, he's gone over 100 yards with six touchdowns. He is just wrecking. I mean, we always talk about yards per carry doesn't matter, but there's a point where yards per carry does matter. When you like Jamal Charles's career yards per carry, they mattered. Nick Chubb's career yards per carry and what he's doing, they matter. They're a signal. We can say we don't like yards per carry as a stat, but Nick Chubb's yards per carry, they absolutely matter. He's had one game this season where he's averaged fewer than 5.6 yards per carry. The guy is popping runs and long runs, and he's popping runs that the game goes on. I mean, he's been awesome. It just depends what kind of split we can get. Kareem Hunt's actually been pretty poor from like a fantasy result stance. He's only been a top 30 scorer in two of his past six games. And that includes a handful of games without Nick Chubb. So, I mean, he really hasn't been getting there. He does still get like goal line carries and gets used, but it's really interesting. But I mean, this game is the Spider-Man meme. I mean, you look at, we have a team that runs the most on first downs outside the fourth quarter, and the team that runs is third in run rate. They're the top two teams in 12 personnel in the NFL in this game. I mean, it's crazy to think of what these teams want to do and how they inherently want to play this game. And it's got the highest total on the game slate, and it's going up. It's really crazy to think about that because it doesn't really, it's kind of counterintuitive. But the Browns, like, they went that month of just playing in poor weather and on bye that we forgot that their defense is awful. Like, their defense is horrendous. Dude, they were getting marched down the field by Mike Glennon repeatedly. Keelan Cole had, like, two walk-in touchdowns. And if you played Keelan Cole, I'm sorry. He had, like, two walk-in touchdowns that Glennon missed him on early in that game. But Colin Johnson, it looks like Calvin Johnson last week in this game. They've got guys wide open. They're due Garrett back to pressure the quarterback. But their back end is banged up. No Denzel Ward still in this game. You know, it's interesting when you look at this game too, because AJ Brown's like another one of these guys. Like, he doesn't make any damn sense, really. Like, he's just really good. That's really all we can say. That's what makes sense, is that AJ Brown is really awesome. I mean, you look at, since he's come back, he's 13th in wide receivers and targets, 21st in receptions. He's in expected points, he's 20th, but he's sixth in yardage. He's third in touchdowns over that span. He scored in seven of his eight games. He hasn't had more than four catches in a game since week six, but he gets there every week. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. He shouldn't be, but he's just an efficiency outlier, man. I mean, sometimes you just have to bite the bullet with these guys and just understand that they're unicorns. And that's kind of what his teammate Derrick Henry is too. So they've got a pair of unicorns on this roster. Because AJ Brown just keeps getting there too on low volume and splash plays.
Also, and that one outside kicks, yeah.
One game he didn't score against the Colts in week 10, he dropped the 50-yard touchdown from Ryan Tannehill. Yeah. So, like, that shouldn't have even been an outlier spot for him.
Yeah, John, so talk about Cleveland, and like, you know, like Rich was saying, like, we basically have not seen this offense since Beckham got hurt in a healthy environment. We finally saw it last week. Landry thrived. Chubb seems to be separating himself to some degree, you know, against Hunt, and more justifying the difference in price and asking price. 7.7 for Chubb, 5.4 for Hunt. That's DK specific. I'm also going to throw this out there. You're going to hear a lot of people say this in DFS, and I understand it makes sense from a correlation, and it's negative correlation and all that, and maybe it hurts the ceiling to some degree. They're going to say you can't play two running backs in the same game. I think you can. Like, you're trying to be different sometimes, and people are going to run it back with, like, Landry and Henry, or they're going to have Chubb and Brown. I think you can just play Chubb and Henry together. Like, there's a world where they both absolutely smash. So I'm going to throw that rule out. I understand why that rule's in place, but I'm just going to say I'll throw it out. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we now have six games with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt together. And in the last five, so you remove week one, that negative game script, early negative game script as well, against the Ravens, and Baker Mayfield has thrown fewer than 30 pass attempts in his last five with both running backs together. Even last week, 29 attempts. We know what this offense wants to do, and that is run the ball with both of their backs. Last week, as Rich mentioned, it was a full month, literally, because they had the win game in Cleveland, a bye week, another win game against Houston, and then the rain game against Philadelphia. Literally a full month and since we had seen Cleveland's offense do what they do. And in that game, Jarvis Landry got a 40% target share. He's been really, since Odell Beckham went out, the only player still that Baker's looking to. But again, the volume won't be there. And unlike Kirk Cousins, who we'll talk about later at another portion of this show, even when volume has been there, Baker has not really been that efficient, and hasn't been efficient on little volume this year as well. So I understand there is a path for Baker to win tournaments this week, but I don't think I would be on it, even though it is a wonky position this week.
Does anybody want to sell me on one of the tight ends here? Tight end's just terrible again this week. No Kelsey in the main slate. Tight end depth. Tight end's just been a disaster all season long. Sure, Hooper can get a touchdown. Sure, Johnny can get a touchdown. But, like, I don't know.
If Johnny doesn't play, Firkser is definitely in play at 25. And, man, he's already been basically getting more catches than him. If Johnny didn't practice today, so we'll, you know, keep tabs on it. But he would be in play if Johnny's out.
Go ahead.
Oh, John. Yeah, Jonu had that one game this year against the Texans where he was out, and Firkser actually finished with team highs and targets, and then also spiked a touchdown. Like, honestly, that would make my week for me, because I think I would double stack Ryan Tannehill, avoid Derrick Henry, and go with AJ Brown and Firkser if Jonu Smith was getting rolled out. That'd make it so easy.
Yeah, I mean, if I can get Firkser with 2.5K and he puts up like his 8 or 9 points or something like that, I'd be thrilled to lock that in. I mean, of course, he can get a zero as well. Like everything, we're recording this on a Wednesday night. If you guys are watching us on Thursday or Friday, whatever, stay tuned to the news. It's very, very fluid this year, more so this year than it has been in other years. Rich, you got anything else this game before we move on?
No, that's pretty cool.
Do we like Hunt? Is this sort of whatever? Like, are we souring on him?
I just don't know how you get there, man. Like, he at his price, like, you still probably need multiple trips to the box. Maybe. I mean, I'm not going to talk anyone out of it, but he's not going to be in my player pool.
I used Hunt on DK last week, but only as a ownership play. Like, Nick Chubb came in at higher, and I was like, well, if Hunt is $1,500 cheaper, like he was last week, then why wouldn't I play Hunt if he's coming in at lower ownership? That makes sense. But again, like, Chubb just routed him. So one-week PTSD, but
– Well, the one thing people keep getting on is the, you know, Hunt's usage, you know, near the goal line, which is true, but he's also been worse at the goal line. So when you're bad at the goal line, you get more carries on subsequent downs. You know, it's kind of how Chubb was last year. Remember, like, that Buffalo game, he had like 8 carries from inside the 5, and people kept citing his inside the 5 stats all year. And it's like, well, he only had those 8 carries because he kept getting stoned on those. They were just one. It was first down, second down, third down. It wasn't like he had them spread out over 8 games from the 1-yard line. He didn't get in. So, I mean, that's kind of what we've had with Chubb a little bit, or Hunt a little bit.
All right, moving on. Rams versus the Cardinals. 48.5 is the total. The Rams are 3-point favorites here in Arizona. And, well, John, I guess we'll start with Murray. And, you know, he had a shoulder. He had, I think, his worst game of the week last year. Only ran the ball 5 times as well. Didn't get in the box. Worst fantasy output as well against New England. How concerned are we about it? Is that causation? Is that small sample size? Or we just not know?
I'd say I'm pretty, but also because defenses are playing him differently. 10 total carries the past 2 games, 5 in each. In that span, he has 4 runs for -1 yards on zone reads because, according to him, defenders have been told to play only him and forced him to hand the ball off to running backs. And then, of course, in the past month, their last 4 games, Murray has been blitzed on 40% of his dropbacks, where he was only blitzed on 17% in Arizona's first 7 games. So, honestly, it's a combination of the shoulder, dumping off the running backs more, and then defenses playing him completely different. So, and this Rams defense, of course, is one that I have come around to respect, although I did not the first few games. Clearly, they are playing very well, even stoning Nick Mullins until the final 2 drives, where the 49ers just called up some beautiful plays and tied the game on 2 field goals. So, I think it's a miserable spot for Arizona, actually.
Rich, your thoughts as far as Arizona as a whole offensively?
Yeah, I mean, this is a game when you see team-wise that we should be excited about, and we know there is an outcome in this game where it does pop. But also, when you look at this game, both these teams have had 8 of their 11 games this season go under the game total. That's the highest rate in the league. They're both tied for that. So they don't tend to play a lot of games that pop. I mean, the Rams are just a weird team anyways, because the Rams actually are kind of like the new Patriots, man, in a way. Like, they have really – they, like, go week to week and change what they do. Their outcome is totally different. Like, they don't try to do the same stuff every week, especially defensively. Like Daigle talked about, But they've done this a little bit, you know, recently. We've seen it in the Tampa Bay game where they just came out and just threw. They were like, we're going to come out and throw every play. So it's been interesting to see what they do here because the Cardinals do blitz a lot. This is not the same team that, you know, Jared Goff torched both games last year. It's not the same defense at all. This Arizona defense has been respectable. They've allowed more than two touchdown passes in just one game this season. And Jared Goff's a guy that we're always pretty sketchy on getting us there anyways. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, obviously everyone and their grandma cited Robert Woods' stats against Patrick Peterson already this week. But, you know, he's just been a better outright play than Cooper Kupp so far in general. He's got more touchdowns. He gets more end zone targets. I mean, Cooper Kupp has been an all or nothing player. I mean, he's been now the wide receiver 33 or lower in PPR scoring in 7 of his 11 games this season. He's been all or nothing outside of those wide receiver 1 week. So he either hits or he doesn't. Last week was a bad spot for him. He historically is bad against the Niners. And like I kind of hit it about with Josh Allen, the Niners are really good against teams that only can throw intermediately. We've seen them shut down Drew Brees a couple weeks ago. And granted, you know, there was an injury there, but look at their splits versus the deep ball and intermediate. And that's where the Rams just, it was symmetry last week. I bet the Niners because of that, and they hit and they won outright, which was cool, a little humble brag. But that's why Cooper Kupp didn't get off last week. And you look at his history against the 49ers, Cooper Kupp has never done good because that defense is built to stop the intermediate and shallow pass. They're going to, it's a different defense this week. I think Robert Woods is just a better play, but I don't think we need to cite his splits versus Patrick Peterson. I just think he's been a better player than Cooper Kupp this year in totality, and is their best target.
You were talking about the Rams being like the Patriots, and it's like, you know, one of the things with the Patriots is always like historically it's annoying trying to figure out which running back to play or which.
Oh boy, we're there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. It looks like Akers is the best. At least he was last week, and obviously there's some draft equity there. But you know, this is like the Colts, you know, trying to figure out their usage. And I think you're the one that picked this game to feature. And it, to be fair, there wasn't. We had to pick three, so this is one of the three. It's a dome. Sell me on one of these running backs. Do you care about the running backs or you're on the receivers? Well, what do we like in this game?
I mean, Cam Akers was more explosive last week. I would imagine he gets more touches, but does that make him the featured guy? No, because they're still going to use all three. I mean, since Daryl Henderson came back from the bye week with that quad injury he went into there with, he's averaged 2 yards per carry, like 25 carries for 55 yards. It's been miserable. Cam Akers has been the best player. Having said that, he's still getting out-snapped. Malcolm Brown is still running more routes, and Daryl Henderson's still getting more carries, honestly. So I think the usage change, but does the usage change enough for me to gamble and put Akers in my tournament pool and try to be ahead of the usage? I don't think so right now. Although the running back spot is, it's very hard to find like confident options. Your cheap options you're confident in this week.
Yeah, Malcolm Brown leads the NFL in third down touches. Like that role is his. Wow. Like it's. That's the thing. So, I mean, that role is locked up. So even if Akers cuts into Henderson, there's still it's complete triumvirate. Like it's a bummer, but it's where we are. Akers definitely he's gotten the box the past 2 weeks, which helps. But and he had the long run. But you look at his touches, there's still not anything I think you really want to buy into.
The other side, Kenyon Drake at 22 carries last week. He did get in the box a couple times as well. Also saw 4 targets, 5 the previous week. Which is a nice uptick, I suppose. Is that going to continue? Edmonds is the one that we all want to, well, that's the people's champ. We want to make Edmonds the guy, but, you know, we're not making the calls out there. And it seems like it's still Drake's job, but nobody wants to play Drake. Or what are we doing here, Rich?
Well, it's really Kenyon Drake. His performance is basically exactly how it's been all year. You know, there was a little bit there where we thought Edmonds was going to overtake Drake, and then we had the injury, and we're like, here it is. And it's going to be Edmonds the rest of the year. And then Drake didn't miss as many times. He just missed the one game, and they had a bye week. So he missed one game, came back, and he's just shut the door on Edmonds again. 57 touches to 27 touches since returning. The difference with Drake – he's scoring touchdowns. So it's just all touchdown deodorant. I mean, you look at the past 2 games, I mean, 22 carries for 78 yards, 11 carries for 29 yards, but you score touchdowns, those lines look a little bit different. When you don't score touchdowns and you're finishing as the RB30 every week, everyone's up in arms like they were for the first 5 weeks of the season. But he scored some touchdowns and had some of that deodorant kind of mask his performance. But they've gone right back to using those backs the way they did to start the year, which is a bummer because I think all of us want Chase Edmonds to play a little bit more than he does. but there's just the amount of touches just aren't there. It's a shot in the dark that you get a touchdown. And even if you get a touchdown, it's probably not coming attached to a lot of yardage.
Yeah, speaking of guys that we all want to see play, at least I know DFS Twitter does, Andy Isabella, he got a shot last week. Do we know Fitzgerald, if he's going to be back this week as far as –
Well, he'll be eligible.
Okay. All right. So then Isabella just throwing back out of it. I see.
But to be determined.
Okay. Yeah, it's Wednesday night. We don't know just yet. I guess we should mention Hopkins. Like, Hopkins, you can always play Hopkins. Are we prioritizing him, though?
I mean, no. Hopkins is bit – oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go for it.
I was going to say, Hopkins is part of the shoulder narrative. 15 targets in his last two games, whereas Kenyon Drake, like Rich said, living off touchdowns, but also like Kenyon Drake, 11 targets in total before these past 2 weeks with the shoulder narrative, and now he's had 9 targets in the past 2 games. So it seems like it's taken away from Hopkins and gone to Kenyon Drake in that span. So I don't think prioritizing – I think there are quite a few good receivers on this slate, actually. So, personally, I will not be.
You got anything else in this game that's worth talking about, Daigle, or shall I move on and talk about Colts-Texans?
Unless Reeves does, I'm good to go.
No, that sounds good.
All right, Colts-Texans, 51 is the total. The Texans are 3.5-point dogs here. And I kind of referenced it before, and I know we talked about it previously. You know, Rich, I just don't like playing the Colts, especially with the receiving options. No target shares. We saw Hilton have a nice game last week. Pittman, you know, is probably my favorite play if you're going to force me to pick somebody. Taylor, do we presume Taylor's going to be back? I think the situation was his girlfriend.
He's back. COVID.
Okay, he's good. Back. He's good to go. He wasn't a positive test. It was just he was on COVID IR for tracing.
Okay, so is Jonathan Taylor against this Houston defense? This is like another question. It's like a deja vu. Is it going to be who gets the path here? Because Wilkins is still lurking. Hines, of course, you know, can get some run, but of course he will catch the ball 7 or 8 or 9 times sometimes as well. But Taylor seems like a good option here, and I'm not sure about David Johnson the other side as far as David versus Duke. That's a conversation we'll have later on in the week because David Johnson, I think, is still up in the air. Talking about the Colts backfield.
Yeah, I think this is a good spot for Jonathan Taylor. I mean, we've seen him in a similar spot right before he had to be ineligible to play last week against the Packers at home in a dome, you know, get 26 touches, 22 carries and 4 targets for 114 yards and have his better game, one of his better games of the season, definitely his best game in like the previous 6 weeks. It was the first time he led the backfield in touches since week 6. The staff has already come out and said Jordan Wilkins is pretty banged up right now, which is a signal that they kind of don't want to get him touches. Jordan Wilkins has also been pretty bad recently, so that could also be part of it as well. And then you look at Nyheim Hines. I mean, Nyheim Hines popped in a primetime game for us, so, like, we'll never forget. And he also did a backflip, a really dope backflip off of a touchdown, so we'll never forget. But, like, he's averaged more than 3 yards per carry in just one of his past 10 games. Like, he's not a traditional running back. Like, he's a passing down back. He's not a traditional lineup and give the ball to in the running game, and that's what you want to do against the Houston Texans. I mean, this is they're the worst rushing defense in the NFL and EPA by a pretty good margin. They've allowed the most most explosive yards in the run game in the NFL this season. The ghost of Adrian Peterson ruined the Thanksgiving slate because of the Houston Texans allowing him to plunge in the end zone twice. I think he's a good play, and I think the game script now is going to play out in favor of the Colts because of this Deshaun Watson, you know, Will Fuller, you know, disengagement. I think it's a great bounce-back spot for the Colts, especially with getting all those defensive players back that weren't ineligible to play last week. No Will Fuller on the field. Daigle can talk about, you know, Will Fuller's absence and what that means. But I do think that Jonathan Taylor is a pretty strong, you know, option on this slate.
Ah, I muted myself. How unprofessional. I'm blaming it all on the
appears by Devin, by the way. Special appearance.
That's Devin. There you go. He keeps the ship afloat. Much appreciated, Devin. Hit the like button for Devin. Sure, why not? Like, subscribe, the whole deal. Hit all the buttons. Yeah, feel free, Daigle, if you have any thoughts as far as Taylor. But yeah, Will Fuller is done for the year because he was taking some sort of PED. Brandon Cooks is going to be crazy, crazy heavily owned this week, and he feels like a really strong chalk play. But he's also an interesting like tournament fade because, you know, Brandon Cooks is a guy that traditionally does not get loose like for, you know, 200 yards and 2 or something like that. But he is pretty cheap. Just a kind of interesting conversation as far as figuring how to build lineups this week. But I like him for cash, obviously. And then there's Kiki Cutie. a person named Stephen Mitchell. That's a person, I'm told. I have not seen proof of life, but I imagine he'll be wearing a uniform. What are your thoughts here, John? Talk me through this Texans receiving core.
I have so many. So Sean Watson obviously has averaged a yard and a half fewer yards per attempt, 8.7 to 7.2, and 18 career games without Will Fuller. And in those games, of course, he had DeAndre Hopkins. Now he has the batch of guys that you talked about. Also rookie Isaiah Coulter, Big Play Zay, as they called him at Rhode Island, who also only played against small school, competition as well. So a ragtag group of guys just out there running routes for Watson. I don't know if Watson can fail. Like, I really don't. But if he can, this would certainly be a spot he would do it with Brandon Cooks as your number one receiver, of course. So I don't mind Brandon Cooks as a chalk play. QT still has a high floor, but is he a guy that's going to break the slate? I don't think so. He's just a slot guy who's playing for Randall Cobb. Cobb and Fuller, of course, still vacate 11.6 targets per game for this offense. And where did those trickle down to? I'm more inclined to play Jordan Akins since there's less opportunity cost in playing a tight end among the rest of these group of receivers. And I won't imagine, you could be wrong, you can look it up on your end. I wouldn't think Akins catches a lot of ownership after his poor performance on Thanksgiving.
He doesn't catch anything.
He did have two big end zone targets. One, he was out thrown. Like, that was a fingertip catch. Don't blame that. The other one, Shahia went up and grabbed it. Yes, he instead tried to allow it to fall into his lap. Young guy mistake, whatever the case. There's just to roster a cheap tight end who could soak up these targets as opposed to wasting a spot at wide receiver over everyone goes to that player. I would much rather do that, take Akins and just get out of the situation.
Oh, man, Jordan Akins on Thanksgiving out there looking like Venus de Milo, man. No hands at all. 17% right now on FanDuel. This is like I ran 300 optimals on a Wednesday night, so, you know, grain of salt, yada, yada, yada. But he's right there with the likes of Tyler Higbee. Evan Engram is getting 48% in the optimals for what it's worth. That's FanDuel specific. Yeah, I mean,
nobody playing with Clayton Thorson or Colt McCoy is optimal on any level.
Producer Devin's going to make a second appearance. That's like his favorite players. He's going to be very angry. He loves him some Evan Engram. He must have won him some money sometime. And he's been pretty good, especially compared to
his peers. Well, he was a great play last week.
Yeah. I'm running the optimals right now on DK for what it's worth. But jump in here, Rich. What are your thoughts as far as the Washington receiving core?
Well, the Houston side. Yeah, I mean, Daigle covered it pretty well. I mean, people forget that Brandon Cooks is like one of the most precocious performing wide receivers like in history. The dude's only 27 years old, and in his first 5 years in the league, he went over 1,000 yards in four of those years with three different quarterbacks and three different teams. Like, play. And like, he's objectively the guy you want to look to first that you say, like, well, where do these targets go? Well, to the good player. These other guys might not be good. One of these guys is an actually good player, and it's Brandon Cooks. And that's why Dean said, he'll be chalky and he'll be popular. He already has a 24% team target share over the past seven games, though. Like, where could that go? Maybe you get a point or two, or, get to 27%, 28%. But, like, is Brandon Cooks be a guy they give 15 targets to? Probably not. I mean, I would doubt it. And also remember, too, the Colts are one of the heaviest zone coverage teams in the NFL. Like, the fact that they're going to give up a lot of big plays probably isn't going to happen anyways. And since Matt Eberflus has been there, Kiki QT actually does have two 11-catch games against the Colts because they play so much zone. Granted, that was in a different offense and different offensive climate, and Kiki QT was actually getting the ball. But, he does have that, kind of an out as a slot receiver matched up against this defense and the style that they play with, as opposed to a team that's going to give up a lot of big plays. So I don't think whoever fills in for Fuller in that role, whether it be Stephen Mitchell or Coulter, are really options that are really going to pop just because that's not the Colts style. All the rest of this ground has pretty much been covered. No one wants to play David Johnson, even if he's back. You hit upon Phil Rivers. A bunch of people are going to tell you that T.Y. Hilton is amazing against the Colts and he's destroyed the Colts over his career, which is pretty true. But the last time they played, he also had 18 yards. So, the one last thing to worry about in this game, and I mentioned Jonathan Taylor and really liking him, is we do have to kind of monitor this dumbass thing that they're doing now at Jacoby Brissett. And if they're going to start sneaking Jacoby Brissett on the 1-yard line, like, that's a problem for everybody. That's not good for anybody involved. If he's going to be like this this dude like Tim Rattay that comes in on the 1 yard line and starts sneaking the ball on the goal line. Like, no one wants any part of this, Frank Reich.
So I ran 300 optimals on DK, by the way. You kind of asked for it. You're going to love this. Brandon Cooks, what it's worth, landing in 59%. That's no surprise. Tight ends. Number one, Jordan Akins, 63%. Yeah.
Brief.
It's good. Well, I mean, look, he's super cheap and he's going to get a couple more, you know, balls thrown his way. And who else are you going to play? Basically, the optimal saying, you know, get as cheap as possible in there, you know, get 10 points and run away. All right. Go ahead.
I could also perhaps get talked into Michael Pittman, honestly. T.Y. Hilton, as Rich said, did all of his damage and garbage time. Every target, catch, and touchdown came in the second half when they were down 35-14, whereas Pittman still led the team in routes run, as he's done the past month, and had 9 targets. So, like, the production was not there, I understand, but the usage and on-field usage was. So we'll see how ownership shakes out. I could change it on Sunday morning, but I could actually see having Pittman in my DK player pool.
And Bradley Roby also suspended was one of the guys.
Yeah. Do we know what he took? I mean, I don't know. Does it matter? I mean, it's, you know,
Cushing is the strength and conditioning coach. So,
oh yeah, that makes so much sense right there. He's got a little Bill Romanowski in him, right? Yeah. Okay. I wasn't aware of that, but that definitely checks out. What do you have for you, John?
They told Roby that he has to read one Manscaped read the entire rest of the season. Yeah. I don't. That's gonna take 5 games. 5 games. So I gotta go, guys.
Yep. Well, you know, does anybody want to talk about the rest of the Colts? Like, sort of like we talk about Pittman, talk about Hilton. Of course, they have their slew of tight ends as well. You know, just for fun, they're having the backup quarterback running in there and siphoning touchdowns as well too. It's just, I don't know what to do with this team. I throw my hands up every single week, but I do agree. And I you know, I'm tentative in saying I like Jonathan Taylor at least on a Wednesday night.
I will play Jonathan Taylor. Like, I'm very confident I will play Jonathan Taylor this week.
All right. You got anything else?
I cannot wait for that Jacoby Brissett sneak like the first quarter. God. Oh, I'm already, like, it just dawned on me, too, that happened last week. And I was just like, oh.
Twice.
Oh, yeah. It happened, man. Yeah, twice. Oh, good.
Two times. All right. Let's run it back to quarterbacks. We kind of ran through some quarterbacks. Or, you know, some of the reasons why we don't like some guys. Who is popping for us, though? Rich, your favorite quarterbacks this week and games we've yet to talk about?
Yeah, it's interesting, this slate in general. I mean, I think Aaron Rodgers is one of the better quarterbacks on this slate. Just he's been so safe, and the Eagles don't blitz at all. So I just think that plays into Rodgers' hands and strengths if you want to go there. He doesn't run, which is unfortunate. I like Tannehill a lot that we talked about earlier. I like Kirk Cousins, like Daigle said. I mean, the problem is that Kirk Cousins is just like an ultimately always tough cash play. Like, we know, like, he's just like, there's always that outcome where they throw 20 times, you know, but they have been throwing the ball. Their defense is so bad that they're getting punched back on. That's what's good. That's what's helping Kirk Cousins of late. He has been a QB1 scorer 3 of his 4 games, 4 of his past 6. He's second in the NFL in yards per completion, second in yards per pass attempt. Jacksonville does not rush the passer at any level. They're 31st in EPA as a pass defense. They're allowing 18.3 passing points per game. They've had multiple passing touchdowns in 5 straight games. The only thing is with, you know, with Cousins is always like that volume outcome. What do we get? I do think the Jaguars will punch back in this game, though. And the Jaguars have shown that they will punch back in games and at least keep them semi-competitive in terms of game script, even though they lose all the time. They're always trailing. They seem to always find a way. James Robinson always finds a way. Like, this dude, like, you cannot fade James Robinson. Like, you just can't. He's going to get there. It just doesn't matter. But, yeah, I do think that Kirk Cousins is interesting. I think it's a tournament play. I think Mitch Trubisky is a good play. I don't care what anyone says. It's week 1 callback when we touted Mitchell Trubisky. 11.7% of Mitchell Trubisky's completions have gone for touchdowns. Only Aaron Rodgers has a higher rate in the NFL this season. He might not always complete passes, but when he does, they're typically for touchdowns. And his past 4 meetings against the Lions, he's thrown 3 or more touchdowns in every single one of them, including week 1, and the Lions are bad. So, I mean, listen, I'm not going to give you any pushback if you tell me that touting Mitchell Trubisky is completely a donkey move, but I think he's in play in tournaments.
I feel like we need to get Crane on the show, because not only is Trubisky a tremendous play, but my birthday is actually on Saturday. So it's the perfect storm for Crane to show up and just ruin the show again.
Like, was that his guy? Crane, was Trubisky his guy?
No, he hated when Rich and I talked about
it. Oh, okay. He hated it. Rightfully so. But and, I actually kind of like it this week too.
I don't celebrate my birthday, so he would always mention, like, he'd always ask me when my birthday is. That way, I mentioned it on the show. And this week, those two things combine. So, like, we do need to call.
Oh, if Ryan Fitzpatrick starts too, he's a good
vintage
play.
Show.
Is yeah, what's gonna happen? I mean,
that's who I have written down.
Is it gonna be Tua or is it gonna be Fitzpatrick? What's Miami doing? Like, what's the? I know there was a report they were saying basically they want to see what they have in Tua because maybe they'll draft another quarterback. You know, and there's this draft coming around. Of course, they also have a chance to make the playoffs. So. Well, I guess there's no point in guessing, but if it's Fitzpatrick and not, is there any threat of him getting benched mid-game? I wouldn't think so, right? If Fitzpatrick is starting, it's just his game.
I mean, they would only start him if Tua is still injured, and I would imagine there's no one else to go to. Like, he wouldn't get benched because there's literally no one else to go to behind Tua. Also, like, Fitzpatrick's just been good. Like, last week we kept asking ourselves, who are the Dolphins going to lean to in the backfield? They said, who cares? They threw three quarters to lead. They had 34 passes from Fitzpatrick to 10 running back carries. Even they don't give a damn. And since week two, Fitzpatrick has averaged 22 fantasy points per game in his six starts in that time. He's just been great. He's an easy double stack as well with Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki, even though they continue using Durham Smythe and Adam Shaheen in the red zone. And like you can never tell which one between them and Gesicki scored the touchdown. It's always confusing. But it's an easy double stack, and Fitzpatrick has been amazing. So I think he's also a really good start.
The Texans are the ones that trip me out. They're all like the same size, and number 13, number 17, number 18. I have no clue who scores for the Texans. Oh, and also, I don't know if you buried the lead or not. The Dolphins are playing the Bengals, which I think we should mention. Did we mention that? Or maybe I didn't hear it. But
that
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's a great matchup. The Bengals are horrific, obviously. And yeah, Trubisky loves himself some A-Rob, so I like that pairing as well. So I don't hate Trubisky this week.
Also,
it's a famous last words. What do you have for me?
Yeah, well, I said also I think Trubisky is in play because everyone's already talking themselves into David Montgomery again.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, he had that one big run for like 60 yards, and then I guess he's back.
When you ran your lineups on both sides, how much David Montgomery showed up? Because there are not a lot of cheap running back plays, and – I already see it shaping up this week. Everyone's coming around to old Monty again.
You're going to love this. Survey says, on FanDuel, this is a good segue to running backs. On FanDuel, again, these are optimal lineups with just a little bit kind of, you know, variance tinkering and things like that, and things will change. But Montgomery, this is beautiful. Montgomery, he's 59%, the number one guy on FanDuel, and he's 65% on DK, and you're going to love him. The second guy is Frank Gore. Yeah.
2020, is, baby.
When I said show, I don't like this slate. This is what I'm talking about.
Imagine how frustrating you would be watching the stack with Trubisky, Montgomery, and Robinson. Like, the most pervading lineup in history this year.
Do I have to run it back with like Marvin Jones? Like, what am I doing? What am I doing there?
Get Cole Kmet involved. He outsnapped Jimmy Graham. We got a full Bears onslaught.
Bears onslaught. All right. So other running backs. Well, we kind of mentioned Dalvin Cook in passing. Obviously, he's a great play. If you guys want to say Dalvin, he's a good play against the Jaguars, right? Yes. You like him? Sure.
Seems decent.
James Robinson's kind of, sort of, somewhat what we want Christian McCaffrey to be, sort of, basically. Kind of, not exactly that, but as far as usage, he's out there basically every single play. He can catch the ball, he can run the ball, and you know, Minnesota's not a scary team. And interesting run back, I suppose. This is another situation where I think you can play, theoretically, both running backs in the same game. It's not like, you know, the math-savvy play, but I don't think it's a terrible idea necessarily. So yeah, Rich, you want to complete your thought as far as James Robinson? You want to pivot to, we don't know about Josh Jacobs, if he's going to play, if he's not going to play. For what it's worth, the sites did preemptively bump up the prices of his backups. So there's really nothing to get excited about, not too excited. Booker's 5.5 on DK, which is, you know, still fairly reasonable, but, you know, not a lot to get excited about. And I think on FanDuel, he's like 6K or something. I don't know. It wasn't great. I wasn't excited about it. Talk to you about Robinson. Anybody else you like here, Ebar?
Yeah, I mean, this is – we've had basically a cheapy running back for probably, I want to say, at least, you know, basically 6-7 weeks running. I mean, even last week, we swallow the chalk with Gallman against the Bengals. You know, he gets in the box. Like, we don't really have a lot of those guys this week. So that's why we're getting back to, you know, David Montgomery. We had a big run in prime time. James Robinson's just a guy I think you want to root for too. Like, I mean, he's got, you know, he's an undrafted rookie. He's 245 yards shy of the undrafted rookie record from yards for scrimmage. He's got a really good shot at that, I would say, in the next three games, probably, at the way he's working. He's got 94 yards from scrimmage or more in his past five games. He gets, and it's in every spot. I mean, look, think about 2 weeks ago, he's facing the Pittsburgh Steelers defense that shut down so many people. They're 14-point dogs. They'd only score 3 points in the game, and he still gets there. Mm-hmm. It's you can't fade him. He has every backfield touch except for seven, rushing attempt. He has every rushing carry out of the backfield except for seven this season, 97%, which is really unheard of. Actually would be an NFL record if it holds the rest of the season. He just keeps getting there. His price has gone up a little bit. It'll be interesting to see. We talked about the bear side a little bit too, just, if Akeem Hicks is out, you know, DeAndre Swift, because a lot of people forget the last time he played, he was excellent. Again, not a great spot against the Washington football team, who has a really good defensive front too. He's really good in the pass game as well, so he has an out. So if he's going to be a 20-touch guy, I think there's upside there if Hicks is out. One guy I like this week already that I know that everyone hates is Miles Sanders. He's coming off of the six. He bottomed out 8 touches for 22 yards on Monday night. Doug Peterson has already answered a million questions on why they didn't get him the football more. But if you watch, they weren't running the ball anyways. So the thing about Miles Sanders that's interesting is so far he has faced 7 teams that are in the top 12 in rushing points out the backfields outside of the games that they faced the Philadelphia Eagles. He's had a gauntlet of a schedule so far on a team that doesn't have a good offensive line. Now he's got a game against the Green Bay Packers, who don't care about stopping the run against anyone, including our boy Monty, who had 100 yards last week. And they are 28th in yardage allowed to running backs, and they've allowed 9 top 10 scoring weeks on the season. No one's going to want to play Miles Sanders. He's got like a tweener price, but he still is a guy that has major upside. He was averaging 100 yards of scrimmage per game before Monday night against that schedule that I laid out. Their schedule's been a nightmare. It's a spot I think that he's going to be able to kind of bounce back, and I think Doug Peterson's going to swerve into the narrative of wanting to get him the ball after Monday night. So that's my hot take of the week.
All right, John, some running backs you like, just a shout-out to Robinson. He's the captain of running backs don't matter, right, the UDFA. Like, he's the guy everybody you can point to and just champion him. Austin Ekeler came back last week. He was phenomenal, especially in the passing game. It looks like he took a hit as far as Keenan Allen. I don't know if that's a small sample size thing, but it's definitely something to monitor going forward, that Allen might lose some of his targets if, Ekeler becomes a thing. That you can't expect Ekeler's going to catch, what do you have, like 10 or 11 balls or something like that, which is pretty ridiculous.
He had 16 targets, a 31% target share.
Well, we have two of the past three games where teams are really starting to heat up Justin Herbert. Like, they're starting to send a lot of blitzes at Justin Herbert, and we've seen it kind of impact him two of the past three games. The first one was the Miami game, but teams are starting to get a little more creative, and that's why a lot of those dump offs came. And obviously, chasing points as late they were in the game, you get a lot more opportunities to check down because teams are playing more shell coverage. That's kind of what happened last week a little bit, but definitely two of the past 3 weeks, teams are really starting to send a lot of heat at Justin Herbert.
Can we talk about that? I know, like, we care about fantasy and fantasy only, but Warren Sharp, Sharp Football Analysis, Rich, he tweeted out the last drive. What were the Chargers do?
Well, I played a ton of Ekeler last week, and it's funny as everyone was yelling because they shouldn't have run the ball off at Hail Mary, but I was like, please get in, Ekeler. I'm like, it was the dumbest play call ever because they lost, like, you know, 25 seconds, but I was like, Jake, get in, man. Get in.
I didn't have Ekeler, but I had the Chargers team total over 23.5. Oh. They were clearly at 17 at the goal line. And then
I bet they over two in that game, so it was trash.
Yeah, they ran a running back carry, of course, with 20 seconds and no timeout, and then a quarterback in which the offense dropped back for pass pro and Herbert ran into the center's ass.
It's an amazing gif. I watched that like 8 times. I just kept watching. It's just fascinating just watching a quarterback sneak when everybody's dropping back for pass protection. All right, John, some running backs you like.
Not too many. Rich brought up a lot of the cheap ones. Not Miles Sanders. I did not expect that one coming on Mitchell Trubisky week, but here we are, 2020. Austin Eckler is one. We just talked about who was on my list. And then the only other one really is Chris Carter. Carlos Hyde outsnapped him 45-21. But I think this is a player I actually want of his usage because he just outright looked better. He performed better than Carlos Hyde. And if they truly do want to stop letting Russ cook and get running backs involved more as it did in that game, then it's going to be Carson moving forward as it was at the beginning of the year. So I like Chris Carson a lot this week.
All right, John, open up the receivers for us. So one of the guys that's popping for us, and I guess we didn't talk about the New Orleans situation much as far as Taysom Hill, as far as quarterbacks. You mentioned him, we kind of mentioned him in passing, but I think he's still definitely in play. It's weird that you're kind of like banking on two rushing touchdowns. That's hard to kind of sort of bank on. He's going to play his second game against Atlanta in the dome once again. And, you know, Michael Thomas, John, is priced down enough to the point where I guess you can justify playing him. And last week was a weird game where their opponent, they scored once they were up like 7-0, the game was over. It was just an absolute disaster, and they realized they didn't have to pass the ball at all. Taysom should be pushing the ball a little bit more. Now he'll be out of the cold, into the dome. You got to cheat Michael Thomas. Feel free to retroactively talk about Taysom Hill. Maybe I just missed it, and then talk about Michael Thomas.
Well, a lot of things in work there because Thomas does have a 46% target share the past two games from Taysom Hill. The issue is that in this 6-score laying the wood on the Raiders that the Falcons somehow did, Matt Ryan still averaged 4.7 yards per attempt. Like, that offense was horrible without Julio Jones. As expected, they just benefited from Carr fumbling twice inside the 20 and then just turned the ball around and scored like a touchdown to Brandon Powell and others. So that's not a matchup I actually want to target because the Falcons defense also been terrific the past month. Like, they really have turned it around. The defense, yeah. And so I don't really think I'll be playing anyone in that game. And it'd usually be a buy low spot for Kamara. But of course, we know the three targets I believe he has, also -2 receiving yards the past two games as well. So although it looks like a sneaky shootout, I think the over-under is currently 45.5. And that sort of makes sense because the game environment just doesn't add up for a high-scoring game.
All right, some receivers you do like, if not Michael Thomas so much, that New Orleans-Atlanta game, you're expecting it. Maybe 46 is about the right number. Who's jumping for you from a receiving perspective?
A few cheap guys, actually. Keelan Cole, if you don't want to go James Robinson or run back. As Rich mentioned earlier, two missed touchdowns pretty much from Mike Glennon, but also ran a route on 100% of Glenn's dropback. So he's on the field as a starting wideout every single play. So I think he's a terrific option because we are pretty sure they're going to put up points on Minnesota. Like, if the Cowboys could do it, then of course the Jaguars can do it. Anybody can do it. And then Denzel Mims, I still think he has to have some touchdown regression coming. As many end zone targets as Breshad Perriman since Jamison Crowder returned has seen at least 7 targets in every game except one, that Chiefs game where the Jet starters got benched as well in a blowout. And since he came back from injured reserve, and it stuck around 8 targets, as many as Perriman, with Sam Darnold under center as well. So I just have to – I think there's a game here that Mims explodes, and, of course, against the Raiders is one he could.
Yeah, he's still fairly cheap as well. And I should ask, and we don't know what's Wednesday night, but if Shark and Cole are both back, that's a pretty severe hit. I'm sorry, if Shark and Conley are both back, that's a pretty severe hit on Cole, I would imagine.
Correct. The last time we saw Conley out, Cole was the one who popped, but also he returned to kick for some extra fantasy juice in that game. But with both Shark and Cole out, Colin Johnson, of course, benefited. He had a big play. One of my favorite prospects, too, while he was in college as well. But Keelan Cole, still the guy going overlooked for DFS, even though the usage was there. So that's how I would play it.
All right, Rich. Your thoughts on anybody that was thrown out there by John? Minnesota, we presume. We think that Thielen's going to be back this week. Him and Jefferson should be good to go there against Jacksonville. Metcalf is just absolutely insane against the Giants. Anybody else? Any thoughts on those guys? Those guys are kind of popping from a projection perspective. Thoughts on those guys, or anybody want to, you know, throw into the conversation?
Yeah, I wish Lockett would get priced down, but he just doesn't get priced down. Because, you know, this is definitely a signal. Like, the Giants have really struggled against guys that can operate on the interior. They've given up some really big games to guys that are on that level. So, I mean, it would have been a game for I think, to go unlock it, but he's still so expensive. You get no freebies on him. I like if Shark plays, I love DJ Shark. And trying to figure out just who is the wide receiver one with Jacksonville outside of him. I mean, Minnesota's allowed a league high 12 touchdowns to opposing wide receiver ones this season. They can be had. I mean, the secondary is so beat up and it's so inexperienced. We didn't even talk about him in the game that we had, but Corey Davis is super cheap. I mean, Corey Davis has been legitimately a good player. In the year of 2020, of course, Corey Davis is good to go. You know, contract year Corey. I mean, the thing about Corey Davis was he was always just miscast. He was never a guy even that I thought, like, coming out was a guy that was an alpha. He was always a guy I thought was going to be better next to an alpha. And that's kind of what we're seeing play out. You know, the emergence of A.J. Brown has made him good. He's always one of these tweeners. He was like a tweener-sized guy. He went to a small school and put up a bunch of production, you know, because he had a bunch of opportunity. But, you know, his like, size profile is literally kind of a tweener. He's more of like a 1B guy, and that's kind of where his strengths are. And he's playing better football, playing next to an alpha wide receiver. And this Brown secondary is so banked up. We didn't even talk about him, but I think he's a really good play. I think he's 5-1 on DK, 6 on FanDuel. A little bit better in the full PPR because A.J. Brown is such a target monster, touchdown monster. But he's a really good play, I think, as well. Allen Robinson, you talk about him. He's a good play. If you want to punt Darnell Mooney and his prayer yards, if you want some prayer yards in your lineup this week, that he fits that bill. But, yeah, and then the Vikings guys too, just because we always say just because the Dalvin Cook is so chalky in another great spot as a home favorite, it's a bad defense. I mean, the leverage goes, again, to the Vikings passing game, and they've been a good play in a few of these weeks here, especially last week when you go to them. I mean, obviously everyone got on Jefferson as the week progressed because Thielen wasn't out when we did this show last week by Wednesday. But I think both these guys are in play. Thielen, even missing the game last week, still leads the NFL in end zone targets with 15. Talking about another secondary that's banged up. We don't know if Sidney Jones is going to play. C.J. Henderson on IR, DJ Hayden on IR. Like, they're just really beat up at this point in the season. And you said it's a direct pivot from the popular Dalvin Cook.
That's the leverage in this slate. The Vikings are implied to score 2 more points than the Titans, the next closest team on the main slate. Like, that's the number one offense in this slate. So figuring out Dalvin Cook or double stacking Kirk Cousins with the obvious options, that's what you're trying to do.
And Friday Kyle and Rudolph, Irv doesn't play. Kyle Rudolph has been solid. He's not much of a fan to play. I know the chat is going to get on us for that again, but you know, you look at his 2 games without Irv, and he's been a really solid PPR guy, especially for his price. And he only went up, I think, to 3-4 on DK. So
he's 3-2. Like, oh, I'm 3-2, sorry.
Yeah. He was 2-8.
No, he's 3-4. I was reading Irv Smith's price for some reason. Yeah, you were correct.
3-4. But I mean, you need Irv out, so you have to just stick a pin in that throughout the week and see if Irv's out. He's got 2 different injuries, though, a groin and a back injury, so keep eyes on that.
Hey, you know, just as a general, like, the Raiders last week was my worst decision. It was a good week for me overall because I landed on a really nice lineup on FanDuel, but the Raiders, I had a lot of Carr. He was an absolute disaster. He couldn't hold on to the ball. This seems like a good bounce-back spot against the Jets, Rich. We don't know about Jacobs, if he's going to play, if he's not going to play, but general thoughts. You think we can go back to Carr? Is he fine, or is he just sort of like
full fade? Full, he had a baby this week. I'm out, man. They had a baby.
No sleep.
There's like, I mean, I'm just gonna play. Like, there's no way, man.
The baby narrative. Usually, the baby narrative is the other way. People say they get excited. They're gonna hit a homer for their baby, or they're gonna throw a touchdown for their baby. You're saying that.
I wonder if that played a part. Listen, I'm gonna swerve into the narrative and say that probably played a role in why he played so bad last week too. It was the worst game as a pro. He had most turnovers in his career. The baby was born the day after. So, like, I mean, I don't know, man. I think that there's definitely a lot in play here, but I'm not playing anyone that had a baby during the week.
Fair enough. I like that stand. By the way, we mentioned on FanDuel, this is the last week. Devin's going to go ahead and drop the information in the chat for you guys. What's up, YouTube? Like and subscribe. Hit all the buttons. Smash all the buttons. You know what to do. We do appreciate that. It does keep the lights on here at RotoGrinders. Last week for the single entry series, there's 3 different buy-in levels, $5, $33, $100, People are always asking, we need more single entry contests. This is, I'm telling you, it's the first thing I enter on FanDuel every single week. I made a run at the $100 one last week, guys. Oh, if Antonio Brown could have caught like one pass, it would have been a lot of fun. But we made the board. We made top 10, like six or seven or something like that. This is the week. We got to close strong. Of course, there's added value because at the end, the top two finishers in each tier, the $3, I'm sorry, the $5, the $33, the $100 tier, get themselves into a six-man $20,000 contest, added value. All right. Also, we want to mention, hey, if you want to use the RT tools, get yourself some Core 4, football, baseball, basketball, golf, of course, basketball right around the corner. The link is going to be dropped in chat. $5 off for that as well, your first month of Core 4 here at rotogrinders.com. All right. We always like to close strong here, and that's why we're going with tight ends. We sort of kind of referenced it throughout the show. Darren Waller seems just overpriced, but he is playing the Jets, and in theory he could separate himself from the bunch. And I think Richie's had some splash games, but for the most part, most of his games are pretty meh, especially when you look at the asking price. What are we doing with
him and him and Hockenson are two guys where it's just like their price just – I mean, they're solid players, but like at the – in this tight end economy, man, like who wants to pay $7,000-$6,000 for those guys? Like you're going to get 50 yards. And if they don't score a touchdown, like what are you really getting? I mean, put that at a different position. That's kind of where we know Travis Kelce on the main slate. It's really easy not to get buried again. I mean, you could say Waller is a great matchup against the Jets, and he does. But like him and Hockenson, I mean, you know, now we have this thing with Goddard. It looks like Ertz is going to play. So, you know, that's kind of a bummer, kind of because he's been playing really well the past 2 weeks. He's finally got going. But I mean, I really think it really comes down to those three guys we talked about earlier, monitoring those injury situations. Well, Akins doesn't have an injury to monitor, but monitoring the injury of Irv Smith and monitoring the injury to Jonnu Smith and seeing if we could play Anthony Firkser and Kyle Rudolph.
Gesicki's kind of sort of somewhat interesting as well. You sort of mentioned him in passing. I want Fitz back there throwing to him. I don't want Tua throwing to him. I think he's a little more interesting with Fitz. What do you have for me, John, as far as some potential tight ends? Who's I mean, could you sell me anybody else that we haven't mentioned yet? Because it's pretty lame as far as the options.
We've talked about the injury situations. I honestly just think you correlate it with your offense. You didn't have to on Thanksgiving in these short slates, but in the main – You just find double stacks with that. That's the only reason I played Gronk as an ancillary option in a total we liked so much last week, because it just fit with the lineup, plus it fit with the stack. That's all I've been doing weekly, and I think you can do it again. If you want a cheap one-off, I have Jordan Reed in my pool. 25 routes last week to Ross Dwelly's 10. He has been the full-time player, and the Bills have allowed the 7th most fantasy points to opposing tight ends. Having said that, also, if Brandon Ayuk returns, which it looks like he's going to, that could ruin Reed's target share. He's seen 6 targets in back-to-back games. So, honestly, let the injuries play out till Friday. Correlate it with the rest of your lineup, and that's just how you should treat it.
It's kind of sad when you're like, man, I wish Jordan Reed was in the main slate. He's on the showdown slate on Monday night, or possibly the 2 games.
Oh, is he? Oh, well, yeah. Don't listen to me then. Just correlate your
No worries. Hey, let me ask you this.
Listen, Detroit, man, week 12 was long.
Yeah, oh, I understand. It's the longest week I think we've ever had on record. Detroit, right? New coach. Do we expect anything different? We talked about Hockenson, or it's like maybe Swift all of a sudden is 100% the man. They sit, you know, Peterson, or he's clearly separated from him. Or it's just going to be the same old Lions. Do we have any thoughts and inclinations on a Wednesday night?
Both teams have covered this year that fired a coach. They've come back and covered the week after. The problem is it looks like Kenny Galladay is not going to play again. Right. You know, he didn't practice today. And like we say, it's Wednesday. You know, monitor it. But he didn't practice again today. And this offense without Kenny Galladay, it looks like they'll probably get DeAndre Swift back, which is a bonus. But I mean, without Kenny Galladay back, and they even had Danny Amendola, like it's literally Marvin Jones, Marvin Hall, Quintez Cephas. Like it's just not a lot to work with.
It's hard to get excited for sure. And I prefer I want Stafford throwing the ball at a dome if I can get it. And that Chicago Bears defense is not necessarily something I'm looking to pick on. And the whole thing looks like a mess. And that's, a lot of the games look like just kind of messy to me. And even the games that are quote unquote appealing are kind of messy, trying to figure out who's going to do what. So yeah, it should be a good,
Betting unders in the 2020 season has kind of been, the fool's gold, but I feel like this definitely has the look of a low scoring fantasy week.
Have you locked in anything yet? Or is you kind of wait, or how do you do that? Because like the lines obviously come out early in the week. Do you like the pounce, or do you like to like see where things sort of settle?
I cannot, so I can't use the sports books in Ohio. I go through, I have a local bookie that I go to. So
fair enough.
Typically at the, yep, old flat, old school, baby, old school. We're exchanging cash. Listen, that's how it rolls. But yeah, that's my situation here in Ohio.
Fair enough. John, you have thoughts on that? I know you want to jump in on something.
No, I mean, I bet on Monday. I bet really early, but also, I do it a little different way that I don't want to discuss on air. So we'll move on.
One thing, I got people left, and you know, a guy I work with, Cleve TA, on the Sharp Angles podcast from a betting side, you know, he has talked up a few times that, like, typically, you know, to get early lines has been the play, but this season with COVID news, it's almost hurt you a lot of times getting on some of these early games, because the COVID news can also hurt you throughout the week. So, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword this season, but typically, you know, you want the best of a number, which is typically early. Like if you had the Chiefs last week, it opened at 3, that hook got you. So that one helped you. But I mean, if you had the Browns, you know, you got screwed, you know, throughout the week, you know, some other teams, the Colts. So, I mean, you gotta, it's like a little bit different this year, but just get a bookie, man. Get a book.
Go old school. Sure. I love, if you learn anything from this show, like, to forget about the plays, what game to stack, get a bookie. There you go.
Bookie's got Venmo now too. It's pretty sweet.
Oh yeah, man.
On that note, I don't have one. I feel like I'm missing out. I know a guy who lives in a legal, you know, legal place and whatever, if I need to. But yeah, I feel like I should have a little throwback and find myself a bookie for sure. If you guys are in the South Florida area, never mind. Don't worry about it. We finished strong, I suppose. Sure, why not? George Costanza will be proud. We got to step aside and get out of here. This was the NFL Pick 6 Show. Of course, if you guys aren't aware, two of the brightest minds in all fantasy football. John Daigle, you go first. Tell them where they can find you.
At NotJDaigle, RotoWorld.com, RotoWorld Football Podcast. Also, find me behind the scenes apologizing to Devin, because I just saw he sent me an email that said my camera's been messed up. So that's where you can find me.
Yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do? It's week 13. Devin will be fine. The chat's that's fine. True. I'm sure they'll be okay. What do you have for me, Rich? Tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, sharpfootballanalysis.com every week with you guys. Shout out my wife of 14 years today, Jennifer. 14 Congrats. Years today. She married in December, so we don't, and this year there's no chance to do anything cool. But, you know, it is our wedding anniversary today.
Congratulations. There you go. All right. We did end strong. There you go. We did it. That's John. That's John Daigle. That's Rich Rebar. I'm Dean. This was the Roto-Grinders NFL Pick 6 Show. Thanks for watching. We're out of here. Holler.